drop for Jack Elka.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. And welcome to another podcast, lots to get through. And for this one, I'm joined by Teddy and Owen Parks. Tonight's podcast sees us start with a player performance review, just the one for this show. Owen, Teddy and I will be running the rule over Andre Gomez this season before going into our big season review later on in the show. And then, of course, we finish with our classic matchday squad quiz where Owen and Teddy go up against each other. In the Math Day Squad quiz. So yeah, the segments are separate as we go through the show, so we introduce them respectively, and we'll get straight into it with the Andre Gomez review, which I'm sure Owen's really looking forward to. But the season now concludes, and we're running the rule over the individual displays that we've seen this year from individual players, and tonight it's the turn of Andre Gomez, Owen's favourite player. So it's great to have Owen on this show, and of course Teddy as well. We'll start with you, Teddy. How do you think Gomez has got on this season, or at least when he has been available?
It's a weird one, that, really, isn't it? Because his season has been very much just informed by the injury. Like, first and foremost, let's get it out the way. He got a horrendous looking injury in the game against Spurs at home. Was that November?
Mm-hmm.
November.
November.
Obviously looked really bad at the time, was a dislocated ankle and fracture to some bones. And I think a lot of people thought he'll be out
for the season.
Yeah, well, I thought he'd be out until the latter part of next season because, you know, broken legs, you don't come back quickly from them. And also, there was speaking for myself, there was some worry that he was going to get a little bit, might end up a bit like Seamus Coleman when he comes back from the injury and he's just lost that little bit of X factor. You know, he's not quite the same player. Okay, Gomez was never a pace player, but he might, be a little bit more timid physically. And I think that has come to pass. He was never a tough tackling midfielder, but he was very strong and
he was forceful and he was aggressive, wasn't he? I don't think we've seen that since he came back.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the season, I think he was pretty much as he was the season before in terms of his own performance. He didn't play as well in terms of the team because along with everyone else, missed Idrissa Gueye.
Yeah, so precisely that.
Beginning of the season, when he was in the team, played one game with John Philippe Gbamin. I did that last episode. John Philippe Gbamin. JP Gbamin.
Put some John Paul Gbamin on after you have a shave.
So he played one game with him against Wolves, played all right. He played one game alongside Tom Davies with the Iwobi ahead of them against West Ham.
That was his best showing.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, Davies and Gomez were highlighted that day on Match of the Day for being, you know, a really effective partnership. Obviously, now those times have changed, change of formation and what have you, and change of form has made that seem a little bit silly now. But I think he was all right at the beginning of the season. He wasn't spectacular. I think he did really suffer from the loss of Idrissa Gueye. I don't think anyone was really, I don't think people realised quite how, much he was going to be missed, especially when his replacement got such a serious injury. And then in the second half of the season, when he came back from the injury, with the delay and project restart, he got back just before that, miracle turnaround for a recovery time. No one expected him to be back as quick as he was. He hasn't been the same since. He's not been as effective. He's not been as strong on the ball. He's had the odd flash here and there. There was, a couple of moments in the away game at Sheffield United. He hasn't been the same on the whole though since he came back from the injury. But I think that's to be expected, from my own opinion. I think he's been okay first half of the season, poor second half of the season. But you can't, for me, judge him on the second half of the season because the injury was such a bad one. Some players don't ever come back from breaks like that.
So, obviously, we did a Seamus Coleman review very recently, and I was quite critical of Coleman. And I know a lot of that is maybe down to the injury that he's lost his edge. But so what can we expect from Gomez next season, do you think, with that in mind? Will he get back to the heights that he was at in his first season, or will he continue on a downward spiral like Coleman seems to have done?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, Coleman lost a bit of pace. Now, he was never a pace player, but that loss of a bit of pace changed his game, whereas Gomez didn't really have any pace to speak of. And if he was to lose a bit, I still don't think it'd change his game dramatically, but he's lost that sort of bulk or strength or muscle where he...
Yeah, he was very, very strong and aggressive, wasn't he?
He's still got ability, as you know, passing-wise, but when you say, will he get back to it next season, he's got to, because right now, I think, not the common consensus, but a common consensus, as I know I won't agree, a common consensus is that he's still our best midfielder, but that won't last for long if the transfer plans come through. He can't, you know, start next season slowly or poorly.
That's what we need to get to ourselves into a position for next season, bring in at least two centre-mids and make it clear that even Andre Gomez, as like you say, is commonly considered to be the best midfielder, they can't coast.
No, he's lucky that the rest of the midfielders are as bad, if not worse, at the minute, because he's lucky that they're all terrible because he hasn't been playing well. But I think going into next season, he probably will have the most stock, he'll have the most credits to his name, whereas the likes of Tom Davies and Sigurdsson won't. But if you bring in a midfielder, if JP Kabamon gets back fit, Gomez will have to start, you know, playing back to the ability, you know, he'll have to start justifying his hype a little bit more to start regulating the team, because he's now in a different formation, which, let's be honest, doesn't suit him.
It really hasn't suited him, has it? And I mean, we've got to touch on the fact that he was bought to be a part of a 4-2-3-1, and now he's playing for a manager who predominantly likes a 4-4-2. So that could well see, even if he does have a part to play, it could see him fall down the pecking order if we find more suitable players for our new formation in the transfer window.
Still a great passer. He still recycles the ball really well, but he can't just let people keep running past him. People are just gliding past him, and he won't get away with it in a 4-4-2. Now, he's never been, as I said before, a tough tackler, but he can stand up for himself more.
He can hold his own better than he has done recently.
Yeah, he does. He needs to play more combatively. He doesn't suit a 4-4-2, but it doesn't mean he can never play in one. But he needs to adapt to it quickly, because he is just getting walked past in the centre midfield. And when there's only two of them in there rather than three, it's going to get...
You cannot have passengers.
No matter who we bring in, they're not going to be this magic player who does the work of everyone, like, you know, everyone expects. Unless we sign N'Golo Kanté, it's not going to happen.
Right, on to Owen, and I'm going to start by giving you a bit of bait to take here, because I think I've mentioned this one to you before, haven't I, Owen? The Watford statistic where Kapuwe, Doucouré and Will Hughes have all combined had less dribble passes than Andre Gomez.
Yeah, that's on Luke on Twitter, isn't it?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm not sure, but Gomez has been dribbled past more than the combined midfield three of Watford, who have gone down, as we now know.
Yeah, just some context. If you think I don't rate Gomez, you want to read Luke Tweety, absolutely hates the bloke.
that Al Kens, the Watford fan.
Yeah, Luke McKenzie. Yeah. He really doesn't rate Gomez. In fact, he was on the bandwagon before I was.
Even a broken clock's right twice a day, that lad's an idiot.
Oh, no. I mean, that's where he... it's completely unrelated, but he's come up with some woeful shouts in the past, by the way. Well, but Gomez... Look, I think if you put Gomez in a 4-3-3 and you just tell him to recycle the ball, he doesn't really affect the game much in the opposition half. I know he had a few assists towards the end. I think he had one against Villa, didn't he? That might just be it, but he's definitely created more since the end we've come back. My issue with him is the other way, because in a 4-4-2, historically anyway, a 4-4-2 has always been more of a counter-attacking, out-of-possession type of formation, where you're looking to more like sit in and like counter-attack the opposition. And in order to do that, you need midfielders, and two of them, by the way, who can take the ball off the opposition and attack forward. Now, he's a good passer of the ball, and he could do that. but I just don't think he's defensively good enough in a 4-4-2 to be able to pull her off. You could say, well, in a way, defensively under Marco Silva, we were a 4-4-2 because Sigurdsson would go next to the striker out of the ball, and Gomez and Garner would sort of sit in as the midfield pivots. But this is a bit different because when we do that now, it sometimes goes to like a 3 or 5 at the back. When we do so, his role changes all the time within it, and I just don't think he's good enough to do so. As for how he's done this season, I think he started bad, and then I think he grew into the season until his injury, and then I think after we come back, he just hasn't been the same player at all. He did okay when he came on against Arsenal, if I remember right, because I think that was all on like adrenaline and what have you, that he's coming back, and he was head and shoulders the best midfielder on the pitch. But then every game since then, I think he's been pretty poor, except the Sheffield United game, which he did play well in. But I think that was a game where there's such an empty space in the midfield, because theirs weren't really doing much, and Tom Davis was pretty bad. So I just think with Gomez, he'll get another year, and if I was in charge, he probably wouldn't, because I look at him and think that he's never going to really suit the formation. But he's a talented player, and if shades of his Valencia days are back, then maybe he can do something. But I just worry about the fact that he doesn't, and I'm not saying Sigurdsson's better than him, not, but when Sigurdsson's playing in Marco Silva's first year, he'd just get goals, and his excuse then was, I can't take him out, he's getting goals, even though he wouldn't do anything for 18 minutes in a game. With Gomez, he doesn't really do that. But I do understand why people like him, because I think if you think that period, when Marco Silva left, when Duncan came in, and Ancelotti's early, kind of, and the whole of Ancelotti's reign, we haven't really been a team that kept the ball really well at times. We've always lost the ball and we've gone a bit more direct. So I think people would rather Gomez stay in the team because he's always looking to keep the ball nice. I know that was also a criticism that was laid at Schneider, and that was just an easy pass. But I think Gomez is a bit more sophisticated than Schneider, but it's more of the off the ball work that really does
concern. Yeah, it is frustrating sometimes with Gomez. I think it's that exact statistic that sums up Gomez's fatal flaws, is that he just get beaten too easily in the midfield, like when we're out of possession. He's literally like a training cone, isn't he?
Yeah, and another thing that doesn't really work in his favour when that does happen, and I'm not, when Gomez plays, he doesn't look like he's working hard, and that's probably not an accurate reflection of his game, but he always looks like he's coasting through games. That might be a bit harsh, but he's not a blood and thunder player. He doesn't look like he gives everything, and that can sometimes be annoying. But
especially when the chips are down, like we've had a couple of bad results, it does look frustrating to see him standing there, like I say, like a training cone, and watching players just dribble around him.
Yeah, he's nice on the ball, but apart from that, I'm not really sure what he's good at. He was really good. You know, if we were playing Declan Rice every week, and he's been good lately, Declan Rice, but if we were playing against Declan Rice every week, I'd have Gomez in there every week because he schools him every time he plays. But like I said, it's tough because he's not the best off the ball, and I think we need midfielders who are good off the ball if we're going to carry out what we're planning to do with the 4-4-2.
Yeah, I think it's the interesting thing with Gomez, I think, for me moving forwards would be, what would Gomez be like next season, even in a 4-4-2, if we brought in the right kind of ball winner that you're on about to play next to him?
Yeah, my issue with that, though, also would be he's not the most creative either, so we'll see. We'll see how he does next season, but I think he's got to deliver next season, or I don't think anyone in a year's time will be making excuses for him. My issue with the injury was bad, but I don't think he was necessarily Andres Iniesta before the injury either. I just think he was a tidy player, but again, he still had the same flaws as he has now. He just looked a bit, because of the formation change, he went straight manager, pre and post injury, so I do feel for him in that coming into a new manager system. Rustiness as well, but I just we'll see how he does next season. But I think that there's big question marks there. I'm not writing them off like I'm writing Bernard off, but I do think there's some serious questions.
So I think the jury's out, it seems, on Andre Gomez for next season, and Owen's fronting the jury.
Me and Luke McKenzie.
Well, hands across down to the Championship, get a Wofford fan up to like do the verdict.
Oh, I know. They've got a pretty decent midfield though with Kapu though. I think he's a good player.
I'll be honest, they've gone down and I'd have a couple of their midfield.
I do look at them and think I don't know quite how they've gone down because I don't think they've got a bad team, but they have.
Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, Andre Gomez, again, it's a case of looking to the future now and seeing what next season holds for him, because it's going to be a crucial season for him. This will be the time where we'll expect him to find his feet again and hopefully see what he's really made of, regardless of what formation he's playing in. And like Owen says, it might be time to look at moving him on if he doesn't cut the mustard next season. But he'll definitely get the season to prove himself. He's levels above some of the other crap that we need to get rid of. So
no, I do look at the other midfielders we've got, notably Sigurdsson and Davis, and I just don't think they've got any chance. I think he's got some chance, but he'd need to improve a lot of areas in this game for adaptability. If Andre Gomez wasn't our player, there'd be no way we'd look to sign him because of the suitability to the system. We've got him, so we need to have a look at him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Obviously, he signed last summer after the loan the first season. If it was after the loan this season, we probably wouldn't buy him.
No, probably not. But it is what it is. He did have a decent first season, and Silva did like him. I just feel that my issue is the way people think he's amazing and he's not. I didn't have really an issue with him, but I looked at him and said, do we think he can do more? And people suddenly thought he'd been perfect.
Yeah, I know that, Owen, one of your real pet hates in football is anyone who's overhyped.
Yeah, no, the people who are the darlings of football Twitter, and they're not really that good. But
Owen's been waiting for quite some time for this segment so he could say his piece, and there you have it.
No, people think I really dislike him or something. I just don't think he's really a good fit, but whatever.
You like the first one in there, though, vocally. It was like...
He was the eyebrow raiser.
Yeah, I remember that was how I first noticed you on Twitter, though, and I was like, who's this fucking lad like saying that Gomez is shite? Is he for real? And now, like, over time, I've gone... He had a point, he was well ahead of the curve. He's not shite, but for me at least, you were definitely the first one I saw, like, saying, yeah, we're all raving over this lad and he's not that good. And I remember seeing it going, nah, he doesn't know his onions, him. And now, as I'm going, like, are we the baddies? Do I not know of the onions? What's going on here? Like,
Marco Silva, still be
I've got a litany of terrible shouts, though. I had an argument with my mates. Well, when I first got to know my mate in work, he, Everton fan, I was talking to him on a dinner, and I was saying he was raving over Calvert-Lewin being like good. This is back like 3 years ago, and I was going, I don't see it. You know when he was playing on like the right and the left.
I said
Adam Ola Luchman, he's the one. And I was just, now it's like I've looked back and go, even though some people don't like Calvert-Lewin, just think, yeah, I lost that one. Calvert-Lewin made much more of himself than Luchman did at Everton. And I remember walking away from him going, hasn't got a clue, that lad. And I've come to realise, to me, he hasn't got a clue. But to be honest, time proves me wrong constantly.
Yeah, and you are on the show with me weekly, and we have these discussions.
Master of shite shouts, mate.
It's interesting, though, with Luchman, though, isn't it, that he's never really worked out at Leipzig or anything?
No, I didn't rate him at all, to be honest. I just looked at him and I thought he's gone through the motions. But what I would say, I was terribly wrong on Ronald Koeman. When he first came in, I thought, do you know what, he knows what he's doing, this fella. And then I gave
him... I think we were all fooled by that.
it's because it was so bad.
It was because if this isn't Martinez, this is good.
Yeah. No, that was probably me, to be honest, because I really didn't like him. But I thought, even up until like Limassol's at Farmers and that would come up, I said, no, he'll turn it around. He just needs to strike it in January.
Oh, God.
Well, we're all guilty of it. At least we can admit it.
Right, and on that note, we're going to finish with our review with our totally, like, you know, our knowledge is so good. We can give our ratings for Andre Gomez. Start with Owen. The critics are waiting to hear what you've got to say here, Owen. What would you give him out of 10?
Before his injury, I'd give him a 6. Post-injury, I'd give him a 1. So somewhere in between that. So maybe, I don't know, a 3, a 4, 3 or 4.
3 or 4. Terry?
I'm going to go with a 6 with like a very, you know, with an asterisk on it, because I know an asterisk that in vogue. Basically, because I am explaining away / excuse making for the poor form after the lockdown due to the bad injury. So I'm not counting that as heavily as I probably should, which, even though I'm saying that out loud, I'm thinking, you absolute shit, I was just give him a low mark. But no, I'm going for a 6 with an asterisk.
Yeah, well, you need to buy one of them, you know, big silver sixes off St. John's Market, you know, and like, you know, take it to Finch Farm.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll give him a 4 because he was a solid 6.5 I thought before the injury. Now I literally think he's been probably as bad as Sigurdsson since the injury. So one of them.
So it's a 4 and a 6, and I'm going right down the middle, as it always seems to be on these shows. Now, but I was planning on giving him a 5, and a 5 is what he's going to get from me. We're going to be running the rule back over Everton's worst Premier League finish for 16 years, in case you wanted any spoilers. So it's going to be an interesting one. We're going to be going right back to the beginning of the season and basically running through the season sort of in order and seeing what went right and what went wrong. I think there was more of the latter than the former, as you can probably tell by the way the season's panned out. But we'll get straight into it. We go into the season with, obviously, about 6 or 7 new faces, wasn't it? We had Moise Keane, Jean-Philippe Gabamon, not Jean-Paul Gabamon, Teddy. We had Keane, Gabamon, Fabian Delph, Sidibe on loan, and Iwobi. Oh, and Jonas Lissler, almost forgot about him. We had a couple of new faces. There was generally a decent sense of optimism, like after an all right season last year, that we could kick on. The general idea around Marco Silva was that he was an okay manager this time last year. I know it's unbelievable to think it now, but, you know, there was a lot of people who still very much believed in Marco Silva going into the start of this season. And we go to Crystal Palace on the opening day, getting a 0-0 draw. How were you feeling going into the season? Start with you, Owen.
I was fairly confident, to be honest, because I thought that the way we'd finished the season, even though we'd lost Garner and we were short a centre back, I thought this was before Mason Holgate rise to fame. We brought Keane in with Calvert-Lewin. We got Sidibe cover right back. I thought that, still thinking improvements on John Joe Kenny. The midfield, we had Gabamon and we had Gomez, plus that experience with Delph. So, yeah, I thought we'd be all right. I overestimated Marco Silva's management ability, the truth being that he was severely flawed. And I just underestimated how our teams were doing the league. We ended up finishing above us. I thought the teams would do well and we'd be in around a certain pack of teams, but I just think that we overestimated ourselves and underestimated other teams. And, yeah, we need to learn lessons as a club for that. But going into the season, I thought we had a good start as well in terms of fixtures on paper that we could put some points down in. But it never really did it never really did.
Never materialised, did it? I mean, we got a couple of the first two home games we won, and I think at one point, I think certainly after the Wolves game, I thought we could be all right this season.
Yeah, the issue always was with us though was even with them first two home games, Watford and Wolves. Watford really should have got a point if you look back on the day. Bernard scored, and then they have a few gilt-edged chances. I think Deeney in the second half and Decore.
Right,
the Wolves game, they came back. They were pretty poor. Sam from there had a bad start, and we nicked a good header in the end. We got through in the cup, Lincoln. But Palace away was just an ordinary performance from Crystal Palace.
It was an ugly game. Now I think it was really windy, wasn't it? I think.
The thing was Zaha as well. Was he staying or was he going? They had another summer where they didn't spend anything. So from the get go, they were sort of battling against it to try and keep their head going in above water in the league. Whereas we were going into it trying to chase every team to win it because we felt pretty good. In the end, the issue was always, I think, not over expectation, but we overestimated certain individuals at the club, and that's probably brought down where we are now, to be honest.
With that in mind, do you want to go and name some names over people we've maybe overestimated?
Well, the manager, Silva. I would say we overestimated the reality of what Moyes Keane could probably do in one season.
Yeah, definitely.
Overestimated, I would say, Gylfi Sigurdsson's ability to just continuously score goals despite the fact he doesn't do much. And I just think we underestimated other teams in and around us as well.
Yeah, I think that was the most depressing part of this season for me, was watching other teams just overtake us.
Yeah.
It was really, really depressing. And what was interesting is that after that Wolves game, we were in the top six.
Yeah.
And we go into the international break, and then we come back, and you're thinking, you know, we could kick on here. We've got some winnable games. So we go to Bournemouth away.
I'm sure we'll talk about what was the moment in the season for you where it didn't feel right, and it was just a big change in mood, that Bournemouth game. Because we were six literally after the Wolves game. Then after that Bournemouth game, it just started to all get a bit toxic. I remember the silver alpha was sprayed along random streets by Goodison. That the whole mood around the club just changed, and it never really got back after that.
Yeah, it was so bizarre because I remember feeling pretty good during that international break after we'd beaten Wolves. And then we literally, I think it changed in 90 minutes against Bournemouth.
I don't think we ever really got it back then.
And I mean, it was understandable why so many people were angry at that display because, I mean, they've still gone down. Bournemouth, they're not a very good team. And we were so disorganised. I remember that Callum Wilson goal where half the defensive line was just all over the same side and give them a free run on goal. And it was just... The offside line was a diagonal line and all that. It was unbelievable. And the defensive side of it was appalling.
But I would say from that moment on, the mood really shifted. It all got a bit weird very quick.
Yeah, and then, of course, we play Sheffield United, who we know have, in the benefit of hindsight, have had a very good season. But at this point, they were still six games into a new Premier League season as a newly promoted club. And we got beat at home off them. I think that was the point where I really started to lose confidence.
It's all a bit knee-jerk thinking about it, about how many games, about four, five, six games into the season. But after that game, I put a tweet out saying the manager had to go because there was no way from me after that he was ever turning it around, and I probably underestimated Sheffield United in doing so there.
Yeah, I think we all underestimated Sheffield United, but I still think that from an Everton perspective, watching those games unfold, it's understandable that we could start to lose confidence because we just didn't look like we had any ideas, did we? Go ahead.
I was just saying that from then on, Silva was always a character I found that was easy to just... He was a very disposable manager, in my opinion. No one really bothered about him. There was no real like affection towards Marco Silva from anyone, really.
No, there wasn't. And to be honest,
people weren't bothered.
Yeah, and then of course we go on, we lose a few more games, Man City, Burnley. Then we get a decent win against West Ham, which sort of bought them a bit longer.
There was real speculation after that Burnley game, though, that there might have been a change then.
Yeah.
So just before the international break. They have 10 men, or we have 10 men, or we have 10 men.
We had 10 men, Coleman got a red.
Yeah, and then what I think that was the real, like, depressing thing from them was, I think we were in the bottom three after that game, and then you just looked at teams who were, like, I think Burnley and Palace were fighting out for fourth and fifth at that point, and they hadn't spent anything. We'd spent loads, and there was real questions at that point.
And obviously the questions didn't get answered at that stage, but we did get a good response against West Ham. It was a good win, played pretty well. That's probably the best, one of the best performances of the season, to be honest. And I mean, that's not, that tells you how poor a lot of the performances were. And then we go, looking like we might have just turned a corner again. And we go 2-1 up against Brighton.
Yeah.
And then VAR steps in. And I remember watching this one. This was really painful because this was probably the first time, like, you know, VAR was brand new at the start of the season. This was the first time that we'd really been shafted by the VAR. And yeah, it wasn't enjoyable because it cost us that win, and we ended up going on to lose it, of course. It was sickening, wasn't it?
Yeah, the issue with that was that it just felt like we, no matter what we would do, because we changed it against West Ham. I think it was Bernard who got injured early on in that Brighton game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and then Sigurdsson came on, and then everything just felt a bit cyclical with it all. And yeah, the real good factor that was there in July went very quickly.
Yeah, of course, we lost that Brighton game late on. And then the next game is the Spurs game where Andre Gomes suffers a horrid injury, which was, again, another game marred by VAR, where, for me, I think Spurs got such an easy ride off the VAR. We maybe should have had a penalty. And for me, the referee was very weak that day. I mean, I've gone on record to say that I think Andre Gomes' injury that day is a result of Spurs players being emboldened to put in hard, aggressive challenges because they were getting away with it. And the referee, we were being had off on a regular basis at this period by referees, as is quite often the case in certain periods during an Everton season, that the referee seems to, you know, really have it in for us. But those two games in a row, Brighton and Spurs, were real sickeners in that respect for me.
Yeah, I just felt at that Spurs game that we could have probably won the game, and referees really didn't help. I think it wasn't Martin Atkinson against Spurs.
I think it was. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, but I remember saying that was as bad a refereeing performance I've ever seen, because that was woeful, because they were getting away with stuff constantly. There was a couple of penalty shouts in that as well.
Yeah, there was two or three penalty shouts for us in that game.
Yeah.
All of them were waved away, not even using the VAR. Or once the VAR was used, and it was blatantly obvious, but he still didn't give it. Yeah. But for me, I think that what annoyed me was that the way they were letting Spurs get away with so much, I think it emboldened players like Son to snap into Gomes the way he did. I don't think those players do that if the referee is clamping down on it.
No, that's true, but I think there was also a sense of, the referees were poor, but we weren't a strong team. We didn't have any strong characters. There was no one coming out fighting for everything. I think
there really wasn't, and that was actually exactly what I was going to move on to next, because in the wake of that Spurs game, there was the obvious fallout over Son and Andre Gomes, who suffered a serious injury. And our club captain, Seamus Coleman, decided that he'd rather go and console the perpetrator of that, Son Heung-min, than actually look out for his teammate, Andre Gomes. And that, for me, really knocked me sick. And what also knocked me sick was at this stage, Marco Silva as well was not speaking out against it. Marco Silva also just was very spineless. He took it way too easily and didn't stick up for anybody in the post-match presser.
No.
And at this point, it was really, I felt like the club had completely lost any sort of character, considering that the manager and the captain were both behaving so spinelessly. It just felt like there was no real Everton fighting spirit left in this team. And it was horrible. It was, that was probably the most depressed I've felt during the whole season. Or certainly not, maybe not depressed, there was worse to come. But certainly the most, where do we go from here, almost? Like, it's like, what can you do when your captain and your manager don't give a shit?
But that, my real concern was at that point, because it was, we were sort of in limbo with the whole situation. We were really struggling at the bottom of the league, and I thought, well, if the captain and the manager at that point didn't have the passion and the energy,
they didn't have the guts
to call this out, how are they going to wrap? How's the whole team going to?
Are they going to help fight us out of the relegation battle if we end up in one?
Yeah, I mean, that characterises Marco Silva's time at the club, though. I remember when he, you know, we haven't come on to his sacking yet, but when he was sacked, I said that was the biggest thing that, you know, was the problem with his leadership. Like, the club had no leadership in that capacity. Like, used to get walked over constantly. Like, the referees would, like, you know, we had two VAR decisions go wrong with us in back-to-back games in the Brighton and Leeds Tottenham game. Didn't criticise them at all. You know, the year before, Jürgen Klopp sprinted onto the pitch and he won't say a thing about it. You know, like, he just gets made to look a show of. This Son incident with Gomez won't condemn anyone. It's just,
it's cowardly, and, you know, that's not the character you want to see from an Everton manager.
No, he wasn't an Everton manager. There was arguments for keeping him. There was people who liked him. I've been in that camp myself. But it was just the, even around this time, I think, you know, like, every time, everything would, he was an unlucky manager, and it was showing. And we're an unlucky club, and you can't have both. And it was just the timid sort of mumbling,
response to it. I think,
we've got to just respect the referee and all that. It was like, oh, you know, you don't. Like, that was when that was for me. You said before, when did you know the season was going bad? Obviously, season and manager are two different things, but that Spurs game was when I joined the cause of, this is, guy's not an Everton manager, he's not going to be an Everton manager. That could be quite late for some people, but when I saw the way he reacted to the Son thing, I was like, no, he doesn't get it.
No, I think that was probably the point for me. I think it was really starting to lose it with the Sheffield United and Burnley results, but I thought, he got the West Ham win, and I thought we were unlucky against Brighton. So I thought, you know what, let's give him the benefit of the doubt for now. But that Tottenham game really sunk me, I think, with Marco Silva. And then, obviously, we move on. We got a win at Southampton after that, which was actually relatively decent. But then, Norwich at home.
Yeah, everything bad about everything at that point just boiled over that day. The substitutions, the in-game management over, the general no energy to go on the pitch and fight in the first place. The fact that we never really at any point under Marco Silva earned the right to win games. It was all because we played well, but we won. There was never any, we're just going to go on the pitch and roll our sleeves up today at any point. It was just, and then it just all came out that day. And I don't think they went on and won another away game after that. I think it was the low point of the season where we all started to collectively look and think we could be in a load of trouble in relegation. I'm talking here as well.
We certainly looked like we were going to go down at that rate, lost that game.
We looked at that December as well, and even if we had the top six teams, and then we even had Newcastle away, who I don't think we went on and beat them, but I don't think they'd lost many home games.
They were unbeaten at home until we beat them.
Yeah, I think they might. I think Leicester and us beat them consecutively. But at that point, I mean, we had Burnley, and that's a tough game, because they were above us. So at that point, you looked at and think, we don't know when our next win's going to come from here. and this fella's not really fighting. The team doesn't fight. They're not, the fans are resigned, so we need something to give us a lift because we look like we're sinking.
Well, then obviously we lose to Leicester and Liverpool, which was two chasing experiences in different ways. But I think at that point we already knew he was going to go. I think they were just free hits for Marco Silva to basically have his nose rubbed in it, which was typical of that kind of manager who wasn't really fighting. So, you know, it was horrible. He was hung out to dry a bit in that respect, but he kind of hung us out to dry. So either way, I think it came back to bite him, I think. And he lost his job, obviously, after the derby. And then we've got, you know, this was a very depressing season, as you can already tell, guys. But this is the... Sorry, go on, Owen.
I would say, how did you feel after that, though? Because Silver had went and we'd gone through this, like, 10 defeats in 15. We were linked with very nomadic managers as well. We didn't realise the calibre of manager we'd end up getting. But I remember feeling pretty low after that, because there's no when that the look was going to change.
Yeah, no, I did feel very low, but I was kind of glad that he'd gone. And I think when I heard Duncan Ferguson was taking charge of the Chelsea game, I suddenly felt a lot better because I thought, you know, we've got a fella who's got experience being a real fighter for Everton, taking on the job. And in that sense, he didn't disappoint, did he? We'll go on to that game now, that Chelsea game at home. That was probably the high point of this season, if you ask me. Yeah, I know we were still very much in the doldrums, even after getting the 3 points, but it was a fantastic day, just everything about it. It was, you know, you can't put it into words. Just, it was Everton in a nutshell, and it wasn't terrible, but Everton, it was actually Everton. Yeah, Terry, what about you, mate? I think watching that Chelsea game, watching Big Dunk go mental and hug ball boys, and, you know, wearing Howard's watch and the sweatbands, and, you know, DCL scoring, and
it was just what the club, it was the supporters, it was the team needed. It was, he injected Everton back into Everton.
Into, like, Everton,
you know,
yeah.
What should be Everton? You know, we're not a fan base who've grown accustomed to or feel entitled to class teams, but we've always felt entitled and been used to strong combative teams. Like Moyes' best teams and best, like, times where it wasn't like he was blowing teams away off the pitch. We've never been a team like that, but we'd outwork them, we'd outfight them, and that's what that's the identity of the supporters. I mean, you know, we were getting linked with managers, and basically, I think it was Jamie Carragher said on Sky going, he was an advocate of Benitez, because he was saying, well, you know, that what Everton should be doing is blood and thunder football, where, you know, like, you're just like bloody the nose of the opposition team. And that's what Dunk brought in. He got in, and those players who, let's be honest, weren't famous for their work rate and their commitment, like Schneidlin and Sigurdsson, ran themselves into having injuries, like, for that game, like the Chelsea game. And Chelsea, let's be honest, they'd been hit and miss a little bit, but they were in the top three and we were in the bottom three, and we absolutely battered them in the sense of, you know, just desire and wanting it. And they got Goodison back on side, and we had, you know, I think it helped as well the way that Charleston scored, like that tower and header, and it was just like, oh, this is Everton. This is
proper as Everton. This is like Big Dunk's Everton, this, like, being,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. This is exactly
Big Dunk, big powerful headers pulling us out of the mire, basically, which is what he did himself as a player.
Yeah, it wasn't as if he came in and he had revolutionised the football. It wasn't that we'd had that malaise come over the club where we'd had a gutless, sort of spineless, never win an away game, never look like we can beat any team who's got a good work rate. You know, we had that version of Everton, and he just literally just picked it up and said, right, get out there and run more than them, and I don't want to see you snapping into tackles. And they did it, and it was fantastic. That game was the most uplifting of the season, because it made me think. I mean, I didn't think we would go down, because we've been a lot worse and didn't come anywhere near going down, but it made me think we're not going anywhere. It was just like, we're going to end up with Moyes, and we're never going to go down with Moyes, but we're never going to do anything either. And it was just a case of, it gave us that breathing space, that the change the changes that Dunk made of putting two strikers up front and just working on, like, you know, compact, you know, aggressive football. It was like, this cuts ice with our supporters, and it did. And everyone came out of that game going, yeah, we're going to be all right. It may not be Dunk for the rest of the season. Some people wanted it to be Dunk for the rest of the season, and I wasn't one of them, but fair enough. Like, he'd done that well. Like, I can see why people wanted that. But it was great. It was a great result because it's just what we needed as a fan base and as a club. You know, like, and not only that, the emotional, passionate side to it as well. It wasn't just the result, the 3 points. It was the hug and the ball boy. He came out in the club suit, which he, you know, doesn't wear usually. And, you know, he had the sweatbands on still. It was just like, oh, this is proper throwback, you know, stuff. This is
proper, like, it's when Everton was still Everton.
Who did you want, by the way?
Sorry?
Who did you want as manager?
Who did I want?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like everyone else. I didn't know who I wanted, but I knew who I didn't.
Yeah, that's exactly how we all were, I think.
I didn't want Moyes. I didn't want to ruin a good thing by having Ferguson just because of the way Solskjaer was at the time. I thought he'll do well for a bit and then it'll fall away, and I don't want to dislike Ferguson in a few months. And that was what happened. I didn't even dream Ancelotti. Even when he was free and available, I thought, nah, what he'll do is he'll go and have a little holiday in Toronto, and then he'll come back in the summer to like an elite level club or a Champions League club. Maybe not a title winning club. But then when obviously we spoke to him, we got him, and I was like, bloody hell, I didn't expect that. But no, I wasn't sure. I just didn't want Moyes. I wanted something new. I wanted something different than what we'd had before. And Moyes was stability, but he was not, there was nothing fresh about Moyes. It was like, yeah, I didn't want to move. Did you want Dyche?
No,
genuinely, that's a question. Did you want Dyche?
It's been unbelievable, to be fair.
I would have had him. I said at the time that I've looked when we've been linked with Pereira and Eddie Howe. I think that I would have had, well, I would have had Dyche over them. But I was more in the Benitez camp. I wanted Benitez. But
see, I was very, very, very do not appoint Benitez.
Roger.
Not because he's an ex-Liverpool manager, because, you know, there's been loads of them. And as a, you know, if years down the line, we needed the manager and, you know, I'd have Klopp in a heartbeat. But for me, the only reason I wouldn't hire Benitez was because he called us a small club. And I mean, I know it might have just been a little jibe here and there, but those things don't wash with fans. And, you know, fans would never have talked to him.
Yeah.
Well, on Benitez, I would have had him in strictly football sense. But I would have had him in the context of, if you just presented all those managers who we were linked with, like Eddie Howe and Vitor Pereira and Moyes, I was like, well, if it's out, and then Benitez, if it's out to them, Benitez has got that higher, like, level of quality. He would have been like a poor man's Ancelotti. Like, he would have done better than any of them, I think. But I didn't want him where I was like, oh, he'd be great. It was sort of like, well, he is the best there. You know, like, he's achieved more than anyone else. And what have you. But then I was like, you know what? Because the comments don't bother me, like, at all. Like, at all. They did at the time, obviously. But now it's sort of like, yeah, whatever. If he comes here, it shows that he's, you know, he doesn't think that anymore, if he ever did. But it was, I thought, we're onto a hiding for nothing if we appoint this man. He's two defeats away from sacked himself because...
Yeah,
he's an ex-Liverpool manager.
He's an ex-Liverpool manager who does all after dinner speaking about Liverpool to this day. It's like, you need someone. And it's, I like who we ended up getting in Ancelotti, who's got the supporters' trust. And it's, you know, people didn't like Silva because what's he won? Who is he? Didn't like Koeman, he didn't get Everton, blah, blah, blah. These are all valid points for different people. But I was like, we can't go in with an ex-Liverpool manager because he's going to get that held against him. Football isn't a passionate game, and I can't judge people, but it will undermine anything he does. He'll have to win every game, and he's not going to.
Put it this way, have Liverpool ever appointed an ex-Everton manager?
No.
Which one would they have wanted?
Yeah. Like, would any of them ever been good enough?
No,
to be honest, like... I've got to be honest with you there, but I don't know. It would have been held against them. Like, it's the English game isn't like that. I mean, I think that's a sign in England, not in, like, Italy and places like that. It doesn't bother them a little bit in Italy, but in, like, England, that's a bit tin pot. That's why Birmingham and Villa and all that can have the same managers, and Bournemouth and Portsmouth and Southampton all have the same managers. It's because they're small, well, not Villa aren't, but most of them are small clubs who aren't bothered. Whereas we're Everton, like we're not having some ex-Liverpool manager who'll do us for a couple of years. And then when he retires, he'll just pretend he never was here. Like, you know, when he's finished up, it'll still say ex-Liverpool under his name. We didn't want that. Like, I didn't know. I thought he's still better than Howe, and he's still better than Vito Pereira, and he's better than Moyes. But he's not palatable to the fan base. I thought Moyes will get it because he's more palatable if he's not desirable.
So
I just looked at him and thought the calibre of manager we're getting linked with here is not very high at all. Benitez will do. I still think he would have done well as ever manager in terms of results. I just thought we needed some stability, especially when you saw when Ferguson came in, it was very much compact in football. We weren't playing out from the back or nothing, were we? So I thought if we're getting results like this, he'll just carry her on. And
I thought he'd sort out our main problem if we got him, which was we were conceding the corners were as good as penalties against us because we were conceding from every set piece and we couldn't defend. And I just thought, you know what, if not Nelson, he'll come in, he'll put Keane and Mina right at the back, and he'll have them sitting on the 6-yard box, and he'll get us nice and comfortable and safe in mid. He'll just do another Allardyce, is what I think, but he'll be less abrasive as a personality. Now, obviously, we didn't know at this point that Ferguson was going to come in and turn Mason Holgate into an absolute demon, and Calvert-Lewin was going to suddenly find decent form and score loads of goals. But I thought, Meenan and Keane will be ideal for Benitez because he'll just sit them deep. And he'll sit Coleman deep, and he'll play like Schneidlin ahead of them, and he'll just sort out the defence, but he won't do nothing else. And I just thought if it has to be someone, it'll be him, but I don't want him.
Yeah, and why you said there about the abrasive personality thing, that's why I kind of weren't going all in on Dyche, because I looked at him and thought he's just going to be compared to Sam Allardyce, and I don't want that. I would rather just, if he got it, would be like a fresh slate where he isn't coming in firefighting. So I don't know, it was a tough situation, but I didn't think we'd get Ancelotti.
So yeah, obviously, just a few days after the Chelsea game, Ancelotti gets sacked by Napoli.
Yeah.
It's interesting that when Dunk was managing us in that Chelsea game, Ancelotti was still contracted to Napoli.
Yeah.
And obviously, they go up the Champions League and he gets the sack.
It was out there, though, wasn't it, if you remember? It was widely reported that after this Champions League game, he's going to get sacked. So I don't think, you know, the owners, the Everton board, were like, we'll wait for Ancelotti. I think they were seeing who became available and just thought, we'll stick with Duncan Ferguson until we get someone we want. Because he was told, Ferguson even said at the time, how many games, and he just went, Chelsea. And he went, all right, chairman, like to Bill Kenwright, he went, I'll do it. And then obviously, they must have said to him, we're trying to get Ancelotti, but it's, you know, obviously the games are coming thick and fast. It's December. We just take a few more. And you could tell Ferguson hated every minute of being in front of cameras, but he thought, if we get a top manager, I'll do the extra games. And that is how it's worked. But it was a weird time, wasn't it? We were happy to have Dunk, but obviously we knew he wasn't keen on staying. And we had this other top manager who people were laughing off, like, oh, yeah, yous aren't going to get him.
I didn't think we had any chance, to be honest. And I thought he just wouldn't come to Everton. I just didn't think he'd want to put what he's done on the line to come to Everton. But it's worked out pretty well, I think, for him as well, because I think he's proved in a way that he can come into a club and get results despite the fact he hasn't got Hollywood players.
Yeah, that's a good point, but also, what surprised me is, like, obviously, we appointed Ancelotti and he settles really well in the city. I mean, who'd have said, like, that Ancelotti would love going to Crosby Beach?
Yeah.
I know.
That's one of the real breaths of fresh air, because I thought he'd come in and be I was hoping he wouldn't be, like, up himself like Ronald Koeman was when he came in, treating it like he was doing the club a favour. And I think he's come in and his attitude's been exemplary.
Yeah.
He ticks every box as a manager for Everton. He's got the pedigree, in the sense of no one will doubt him like they did Marco Silva. Like, you know, he's like a student learning his craft. We don't want that at this club. So he's big enough for the club. He's, to be honest, he's a bit too big for the club of where we are at the minute. he's big enough of in status. He's got the right personality in the sense of he's not like, you know, Martinez who goes too far and he's buttering the supporters up to the point where it's ridiculous. But he clearly has a genuine like for the club and the area and the what have you.
And the fans,
He's got the stomach and the backbone that we need for an Everton manager. And one big thing on the pitch as well is he's got an easily like identifiable style. He gave the team an identity. Now, people might not want us to play that identity while we haven't got the players. A lot of people going, I don't like this 4-4-2. We haven't got the midfielders. I don't like this. I don't like that. But you can't point to what Koeman wanted us to do. Silva said he wanted to play 4-3-3 and then never played it, and we had this mishmash hodgepodge like of players, and they didn't really have a set style and identity. That's something that everyone pines after for the Moyes era, because that team had an identity that you could point to, and so now does Carlo Ancelotti's Everton. We just need to plug in better players to suit it, but you can see what it is. We know now. We can't, you know, we're not going to buy players to play in a five-man midfield. We know now that we need certain types of, you know, wingers. We can't have a name. Everyone, myself included, wanted David Neres at one point. Now everyone knows, no, won't get him. He doesn't work hard enough. It's going to be someone else. So it's easy to nail down what a type. You know, back in the Moyes days, you'd have known if you were linked with a player going, he's not a Moyes player, we're not going to get him. Now it's easy to grasp hold of.
You said that, but we got Billy Electon off.
Yeah.
Well, there was always the odd outlier, but, you know, you'd never have been linked with, you know, a player who, you know, use this as an example, but we'd never have been linked with an Ozil-type player because he just wouldn't have fit in a Moyes team at all. Like, whereas you didn't know who we were going to buy, like, under Silva and you know, Koeman and less so under Allardyce, because he wasn't here long enough, but... Now under Ancelotti, you know, even already after a couple of months, you know, well, he's not going to fit. You know, he's not going to be an Ancelotti player. He's not going to work because he won't fit that system. And as time goes on, we'll see it more and more. But he ticked every box the second he came in, had everything going for him. He united the fan base. There was no one who said, why are we getting him? What we needed. We needed a manager who the club, who the supporters liked enough to not blame the problems on.
It was a unanimous seal of approval, and rightly so, because he is one of the best managers there is.
Yeah, it was now the players are getting the blame, not the manager. It's
And if you ask me, that's correct, because the players are the problem.
Yeah, we hopefully will get that stability now, because it won't be turn on the manager. If we have some bad games, it'll be, why aren't these players playing to his level? Like, and that's what we need as a club, stability and trust in a manager. It's what Moyes built his whole career on.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Another thing, it's not solely on his reputation in the game as well. When he speaks after poor performances, he genuinely speaks for the fans. So after the Wolves game, he was talking about like the spirit of the team, and it's nowhere near good enough. But he doesn't strike me anyway as a manager who hides behind the team. You could have seen someone like if we got Jose Mourinho, for example, he'd have come in and he would have sort of hid behind the team, because he'd have probably made a few mistakes as well, and it would have just been a
pretty blame the players, yeah, but.
With Ancelotti, he talks about standards. He doesn't point anyone out or any referees.
For me, Ancelotti strikes me as a manager who desperately doesn't want to blame the players, but he knows the players are at fault. I was just going to touch on, obviously, Ancelotti comes in, he gets us like two decent wins. First away win in God knows how long against Newcastle. Everton's great. We lose to City, which is, you know, not great, but... It's City. It was a bit of a free hit, and then time for the real. Well, we actually voted in on our award show, didn't we? Our low points of the season, getting knocked out by the under 12s. I thought we had a chance of winning it for once.
Yeah, it was like, I think we might win this, so that means we definitely won't win it even more than when we. I think we won't win it. It was just a really horrible situation that I think then you had like the Finch Farm 11 or 12 or how many of them there were the next day at Finch Farm.
You oh, storm the ground and the Asper brands.
It was just very weird.
They asked for the players, didn't they? And brands had to like appease them.
All the media, yeah.
Yeah. The lowest point of the season.
I forgot about all that. I think I've just said I was in the Black Horse that day. I was completely inebriated by full time because like literally every time something bad happens, I'd order another pint, and it was just like, you know, it's like an Everton drinking game, but wasn't for a laugh.
Well, that whole incident showed a side of Ancelotti that we hadn't had in previous matches, and he just literally battered it away. Like, no problem. Like, they asked him in the press conference, and the media were, like, itching to, like, make this a big thing. You know, mutiny at Everton fans and all that, and he just went, oh, it's done. Happens all the time in Italy. Fans turn up at training grounds and worry about it. And that was it. It was the end of it. It just showed.
Well, to be fair, like, it happens in Italy all the time, to be fair, so he's not wrong.
Yeah, it just showed what an experienced manager he was, that he just saw, he knew, he smelled what they were after. He was like, nah, we're not making this a big story, and just literally shut it down, but not in a sort of like, you know, we don't want to talk about this, it's not a big deal kind of way. He just laughed and went, yeah, it was a bad result, not good enough, the players aren't good enough, I've told them all. And the fans, yeah, not to worry about, it happens all the time. And then that was it. Everyone forgot. There's a reason you could forget about it, because she forgot about pretty quickly at the time. And that surprised me, I thought, when people went
to hang over us for a long time.
This is going to be a problem. This, we're going to have players who want to leave and all kinds, you know, like, and at that time didn't care if they did want to leave, frankly. But it just showed that what Mascheri said it on Talksport when we appointed Ancelotti, and it ran true. It was like, this club needs an older, experienced manager, because young managers, and most managers really, are only three defeats away from disaster at Everton. The expectation is too high for an Eddie Howe, a Marco Silva, whereas someone of decent standard and experience, like a Carlo Ancelotti, can just turn round and go, no, don't worry about it. This is how you get out of this situation. Here's what you do about this. It'll pass. And it has. For the most part, it won't ever work 100% because we're Evertonians, but it has, for the most part, calmed the supporters down somewhat. It doesn't feel like that at the minute, but after the Wolves game and that especially, but when you think about what it was like under Silva and those who came before him, there's a lot more relaxation now. The biggest anxiety now is, can we keep hold of the manager? Not, is the manager good enough?
Yeah, that's a very good point. But of course, after this debacle with the derby and that in January, we had the transfer window, and you spoke there about how well he batters off the derby debacle and the fans storm and the training ground and all that. But what I love about Ancelotti, as much as pretty much everything, I mean, everything about him is bloody great, let's be honest, but the way he bats off the media, full stop. I think when the transfer rumours come in and he just like shuts Sky down for like saying, pretty much outed them for like talking a load of rubbish during a press conference, and I think that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. He knows. He said straight away, didn't he, in the build-up to that Liverpool game, he said, who he is, isn't it, a Liverpool fan, for the journalists. He was like, he'd either been briefed or he knew. It was like, this club gets a certain type of treatment from the press, and I'm not having it. Like, no. Like, you're making stories up about us signing players. He's want to make a big deal out of the fans coming to the ground. And like, I don't know, he's at all frigging Liverpool
fans. Baying for blood, basically.
He's won an Everton negative story, and you're not getting one.
It was kind of a thing to me when I listened to that. He didn't say anything like that. It was more of a case when he was saying that. He was saying, look, you might have been able to get a story out of these previous five managers. You're not getting one out of me. You're matching the kind of way.
I think it was literally, it wasn't even like a jab. I think it was just literally holding us over and just winding them up. Like they try and bait you, so he's going to bait them.
Yeah, it was good. He's off the pitch game is great. It's just he's got to work with what he's got on the pitch, and you know that's none of that is, yeah. But yeah, obviously didn't do any business in January, and like that pisses a lot of people off. But let's be honest, you know, the better business is usually done in the summer, and nobody knew we were going to have COVID-19 do this, did we? So I think knowing what we know now, somebody might have done their business early in the January, but well.
Yeah, well, obviously we go into the lockdown with a much more, you know, acceptable league position, if not amazing. We'd recovered, we'd started out 15th by this point. We were 11th, I think, at the start of lockdown, which, again, not great, but we pick it up again in June with a derby. They're about to win the league at Goodison, and it's all hell's going to break loose, and it doesn't happen. You know, there's a real positive for this season. Like, I mean, everyone thought that was written in stone, that they were going to seal the title at Goodison, and, you know, they didn't beat us, fair play. I thought we played relatively well that day.
I remember going into that game, it was all of a bit of a known, and what really came to pass with the last couple of games towards the end of the season, I thought would probably have happened from the start with just the motivation of the players. But in terms of like a tactical performance, that is probably the most impressed I've been from an Everton team in a very long time, with the fact that they just stuck to the task. And it just looked so smart. We looked refreshed. We had looked like we had ideas, and fair play. I think we talk about Carlo's or the result, not the results. I think we've got very good results in terms of the points we've got, but the league position, that it can look a bit sketchy. But the off the pitch and the on the pitch really on the pitch has not been perfect, basically. But that day from when we came back after lockdown was really, really impressive. We looked the team, we were very well coached.
Yeah, it was a very good display, and we done well. We were unlucky not to win as well, of course. Davis hit the post.
No.
But yeah, that's Everton in derbies. That's just luck, innit? You know,
if we had any luck, Ancelotti would have done them. He would have got a perfect game plan to nullify them, then hit them on the break. And if that shot that hits the post goes in off the post, like it would for 99% of other clubs, like, then you're saying, Ancelotti's got Klopp's card marked and what have you, but obviously can't factor in the fact that Everton won't get anything ever against Liverpool, so he's no one's that good. But it was a really good performance. Like, it also arrested some of the fears, like, you know, we hadn't played any friendlies in the lockdown, and we'd come off some bad results before the lockdown. You know, we had the Arsenal and Chelsea defeats, and the Chelsea defeat was dreadful. Like, we were really bad that day. So obviously coming back from the lockdown, a lot of people thought it wouldn't happen. And then when it did, there was a little bit of a concern, like going, oh, are we going to be like Schalke? Are we going to be dreadful here? And, you know, Liverpool going to win it at our ground? Obviously City made that not possible before the kickoff.
Yeah, that was relieving, that.
Wasn't a sure thing. I still think in another timeline, the lockdown didn't happen and they did win it at Goodison, and it was a full Goodison. Because City playing Burnley with crowd might have been different, but it didn't happen, and thank God for that.
But anyway, we moved on. We won the Norwich game and the Leicester game, and things were looking relatively rosy. That was very impressive. It was all down to the tactics most of the time. That sort of got us over the line in those games, but it all went wrong, really, didn't it? With the Tottenham game and the Wolves game, and we saw the team for, let's be honest, what it really is, and it's a bunch of spineless individuals, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's not a miracle worker, is he? He got us the points in quite a few games at first, like the Leicester game. They were absolutely killing us in the second half, and then he changed it. No, look, put Tom Davis in the space that James Maddison was occupying, and they suddenly, you know, started to fall away. But then, as the players' motivation drifted after Spurs, it was like, yeah, he can't do it with players who are unwilling. And that's what it showed, that when we dropped the points to Spurs, Europe looked out of reach, and then the players just fell off a cliff. Like, and he said in the last game of the season, he said, what I've told the players is come back with more motivation, because he saw it, and that is almost in a roundabout way better, because he's not going into next season with this very short turnaround conned by any player thinking, oh, he's great, and then he's going to find out down the line that he's you know,
Carlo Ancelotti's seen enough players in his time to know what makes an all right player.
He's none of those players can pull the wool over his eyes now. He knows now he can't rely on certain ones, or he shouldn't rely on others as much as he probably does. And he's realised now the scale of, you know, recycling of players that needs to happen in the summer. Whereas if we'd have gone back from the lockdown and played well in every game, there'd be players who probably would still be in situ next season who shouldn't be.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, obviously, we had some terrible results, you know, the Wolves and the Spurs game, and then, of course, the Bournemouth game on the final day. We won't mull over these too much because, you know, we've had post-match reactions very recently to those, and, you know, I think the three of us have done many of them together, and we've made our voices well heard about how depressed we were after those games. So, but we'll round it up anyway with the end of season outcome, which was a 12th place finish, 49 points I think we finished with, which is, you know, let's be honest, it's not good enough, is it?
No,
but it's happened in spite of Ancelotti, not because of him.
Absolutely.
This season, and I know it's an overused expression and it's been used for Everton quite a lot recently, but it's never been truer than now, is a season of transition where you switch from one manager to another, and usually when you switch manager, the change isn't that dramatic, but it is, isn't it? Let's be honest. You're going from Marco Silva to Carlo Ancelotti is a big change, and this off-season, I think, should only be looked at is, did he start to implement his ideas? Did he make that change? And he did. He came in and he carried on what Duncan Ferguson did, but there's been a lot of things he has changed, like the playing out from the back style, the right back being the third centre back. These are all Ancelotti things that, you know, are now getting in place, and there's things that he's brought in which we can't do yet. You know, like the two central midfielders, clearly we haven't got two central midfielders who were fit at the end who could play it, but you know if we'd have had Gbamon, maybe it would have been a lot better because he might have suited it. You just don't know. There's a lot of unknowns, but the things you can hang your hat on, say, well, yeah, he's come in, he's put his ideas in, and more importantly, put his standards in. He's now, no one can get away with it now because everyone knows what this manager expects, and if you can't deliver that, then you're not going to play.
Yeah, I think that's certainly, we've got to see what he brings in. I think it's all eyes are now on the transfer window, obviously. We've got to bring in a better standard of player, and players who, like you say, fit that mould of Carlo Ancelotti's like new system. Because, you know, it's quite a complex system when you think about the way we sort of adapt at times. We're going to need the right kind of personnel to make this work. For me, we need players with energy, bite, and a bit more interest in the midfield. You know, we've been shackled with the ones we've had this season, and, you know, it could be a complete game changer. That's what we've got to hope anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, we'll round off with that anyway. It's definitely a case of must do better next season, but signs of life, hopefully, certainly courtesy of Carlo Ancelotti, if nothing else.
Ancelotti's sort of like average point he's got so far. If you put it over like a full season, it's 60 points, isn't it?
I think we'd have finished seventh if we'd have had him all season on average, but or in his form position in the form table since he took over. I think we ended up seventh, so not bad at all. And hopefully that's a kind of what we'll be pushing for, that kind of position, hopefully next season if we can get it right. And like I say, it's just over to the transfer window now and get the right players in. We'll see what happens. For you podcast listeners, of course, now it's time for the quiz, the classic matchday squad quiz. Owen goes up against Terry. The usual big showdown. We always try and find a winner to give us a song to see out the end of the show. So, let's get to it. We'll do the usual coin toss to figure out who's going to pick. I'll let Owen pick heads or tails this time. Owen, heads or tails, mate?
Going heads.
It's heads, Owen. So, do you want to go first or second, Owen?
I'll go second.
Owen's going to go second. He's putting the initiative over onto Terry here, and Terry's gone first the last two times. He's got two wins in a row now, Terry, so it's going to be an interesting one. We're going to have to see if Terry's really turned a corner in his Toffee Blues quiz career. So, yeah, we'll get straight into it. We'll cue the intense quiz music. It is. And we'll reveal the fixture in question, which is an interesting one. It's a throwback to our Europa League exploits under Roberto Martinez back in 2014-15. And it's a very forgettable game, to be honest. It's Lille 0, Everton 0. Thursday the 23rd of October 2014. We've got the 11 starters and 3 used subs to get through. 14 chances. Teddy, you're up first, mate.
Samuel Eto'o.
Samuel Eto'o started the game. Owen?
Seamus Coleman.
Wow, this was over quick. Teddy's got 3 wins in a row. Seamus Coleman did not play. I can tell you why I know for a fact he didn't play, because this was that game where Tony a bit made himself famous for doing a couple of step overs.
Right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Tony. I remember Teddy Tony did a couple of drag backs like with no one near him, and like everyone just lost their heads.
Tony Hibbert on the same flank as Samuel Eto'o. You saw it.
It was a classic game just for that in itself, and I just remember like Tony Hibbert like had literally no player near him, so he just thought he'd do a couple of drag backs. And it was just it was fun.
Last time we did this, we both got them all right. If it was the Limassol game with Craig Shakespeare.
Oh, God, yeah. And we've had a couple of them recently where it's gone on for ages, but clearly this one was decided in 2 fatal swoops. So yeah, we can try and guess the rest of them anyway. I mean, I've just given you Tony Hibbert, so I'll write that one off.
I said Hibbert as well, though, so I knew it.
Yeah, well, obviously when Coleman didn't start, that would have been Hibbert probably. So yeah, we've got Eto'o and Hibbert, and we've got 12 more to get.
Romelu Lukaku.
Lukaku was a substitute, but yet he did come on.
Stephen Naismith.
No, there wasn't any Stephen Naismith even on the bench.
I presume he played every single one of these games.
Yeah, it did feel that way, but he's not even on the bench.
Aidan McGeady.
Yep, Aidan McGeady started.
Was Mo Bessage around?
Yeah, Mo Bessage played the full game and Shohara got a yellow card.
John Stones?
No, John Stones. He wasn't even on the subs bench.
What team was on that?
I should remember all of this. I was there. I went away to this game.
What one of the 30 million you went?
Yeah, honestly. It was the worst game ever, and we could have won it right at the end, but McGeady didn't square the ball to Lukaku. He's an absolute tramp. Can't stand him. who else?
Ross Barkley.
Yeah, we said that at the same time.
Ross Barkley, yep, started the game.
James McCarthy
came on as the third sub in the 93rd minute for Ross Barkley.
Gareth Barry.
Yep, Gareth Barry played the full game.
Stephen Pienaar
was a starter and got subbed for Lukaku.
Leighton Baines
played the full game.
Phil Jagielka.
Jagielka played the full game.
Sylvain Distan?
Yep, Sylvain Distan was the other centre-back, played the full game. You've got the full-back four. In fact, you've got all of the starters, bar one, and you're missing just one sub now. Leon Osman wasn't even on the bench.
Tim Howard.
Yeah, Tim Howard was the starter you were missing. So now it's just the one used sub.
Kevin Morales.
Nope, no Kevin Morales in the squad at all either.
Christian Atsu.
It was Christian Atsu. He came off the bench for Aidan McGeady. Probably just after he didn't square the ball. That was the team. Tim Howard, Tony Hibbert, Phil Jagielka, Sylvain Distan, Leighton Baines, Gareth Barry, Mohamed Besic, Aidan McGeady, Ross Barkley, Stephen Pienaar, and Samuel Eto'o. Atsu, McCarthy and Lukaku were the 3 used subs, and the unused subs were Joel Robles, Darren Gibson, Seamus Coleman, and Antalyn Alcaraz. So, yeah, interesting. Yeah, so there you have it. Teddy's got a third win in a row in the quiz, and I can already see him scrolling through his phone looking for a song to see the result at the end of the podcast. What have you got in mind, Teddy?
I'm going to go with Come Together by the Beatles.
Oh, very nice.
Got the best, like, bassy intro of any song ever. And it's something we should all do as supporters to support Carlo.
Yeah, that's good. And it's been on an advert for ages on the telly. I can't even remember what it's for, but it's just, I just keep hearing it all the time, and it's a tune, so...
Yeah.
Why in God's name not? So yeah, there you have it, guys. We'll leave it at that. We'll see us out with the Beatles and Come Together. And until next time, thank you for watching. Thank you for tuning in, I should say, on the Toffee Blues.